Hey everyone, and welcome to episode number one of You Are Admirable. Today we're chatting with Missy O'Malley. Missy is currently an anchor, reporter, and producer at a TV station, as well as somebody who is just dear to my heart. In this episode, we explore some of the many, many things that she has done, including becoming a colonel. We get to learn a bit about her family, her philanthropic work in trying to get Ellen to come to Bozeman, her struggles with time management, and much more. She is truly someone who I admire, and it was such a privilege to get to interview her. The interview was shot in two parts, so without further ado, let's jump into it. A lot of people already know you, of course, and they may know that you're from Bismarck and that you moved to Bozeman, kind of traveled back and forth, moved here in 2005. And since then, you've been doing all kinds of things. So you've been a radio DJ, you've been a DJ at events and parties, you've been a wedding officiator, now you are a certified auctioneer.
That's right.
Do we get
It's called a colonel, actually.
The colonel?
Mm-hmm. Once you become a licensed auctioneer, you become a colonel.
Do we get a little bit of, like, auctioneering right now? Is that possible?
I mean, you know, to sell something, it's a simple chant. And once you get the chant down, you kind of develop your own rhythm and cadence and everything that comes with it. Mm-hmm. But the basic rhythmic chant is what you're trying to sell, right? This box of tea. So you want to sell it for $1. Mm-hmm. And I have a $1 bid on the floor. So I'm just going to say it nice and slow one time. I have a $1 bid. Now two. Would you give me two? So you say the number that you're on once, and then the number that you're calling for, you say three times. So once you pick it up, I'm at a $1 bid, now two, would you give me two? And then once, as soon as somebody gets a hip, then obviously you just move up the chain.
Move up.
Now that's the standard basic chant of auctioneering, uh-huh. But people obviously can do insane things with their voices and throats and make it sound like a didgeridoo and make it sound like, I mean, crazy sounds. So that's like what I'm working on now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so how do you get certified then?
You go to school.
Okay.
Yeah, you take like a licensed course.
And they tell you, what you told me was pretty simplistic. They're telling you a lot more.
Oh, yeah. We went to like a 7 or 8 day program.
Okay.
Vocal workshops, counting drills, tongue twisters. That's how we would warm up every morning, was with like a half an hour of like tongue twisters and number drills. Uh-huh. I mean, I kind of felt like I was at like a summer camp for like speech theater geeks that were working on like how to talk. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know, 7:30 every morning we'd be doing Betty Botter and doing that for like 20 minutes straight. It was awesome.
How long was this thing?
My sister and I went together, and we went right outside of St. Louis. And the program that we did is the Missouri Auctioneering School, and it is the longest running auctioneering school from like 1905.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it was awesome. Really, nice. Really crazy experience. We were seven women out of 90 people in the class.
Wow.
Yeah, so and kind of like an older male-dominated profession or idea, I guess, in the past. But now there's so many things opening up with like benefit auctions and fundraisers and philanthropy. And I host so many of those things and provide music or sound or something like that at so many of those things anyway. Mm-hmm. And there was this female auctioneer from Portland, Oregon, and an incredible lady named Jonna Wells. And she's been like a national champion and won these crazy competitions. And she could sell anything. I mean, she's just this super classy broad, this beautiful haircut, and she wears these stunning cocktail dresses and these heels. And the first time I met her, it was for Big Sky Youth Empowerment. We were doing their big annual fundraiser. And I'm getting ready for the music of the night and playing a bunch of, like, cocktail lounge music and whatnot and getting people in the mood, and, you know, silent auctions going on. And they're like, Missy, we'd like to introduce you to the auctioneer tonight. This is Jonna. And in my insanely sexist brain at the time, I was thinking, female auctioneer? Like, what are you talking about? And so she blew the room away. People were throwing their wallets and their purses by the end of it. They were just like,
she
was the best. She was too good. So I called my sister that night. This was like 7 years ago. We'd always kind of like joked about it and talked about it when we were younger. And, you know, we're from North Dakota, auctions happen and they're around, but more so with like fairgrounds and farmyards and barn equipment and things like this. Right. And so anyway, I called my sis and I'd sent her a video. It's like, this lady is going to blow you away. And I've been like Googling her all night and all of that. So then we finally were able to figure out a time to go to school and like really hunker down and get into it. And since then I've done 4 auctions.
Nice.
And I've got 3 coming up in the next couple of months. So
good.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that going on. You got DJing, you've got a big party coming up. You are abroad. You act. You do a lot of philanthropic work, which is awesome, by the way. I'm really into that. How do you find... One of the things that people mention they really admire about you is how you support everybody still. So you come to our shows and you tell everybody else what a great job they've done. And then seemingly at the same point in time, you're doing all of these other things. So how do you go about... juggling everything that you do?
I'm terrible. I'm a terrible multitasker and I'm terrible at juggling and I never sleep. I don't know. It's a great question because I'm trying to figure it out all the time.
How much sleep do you get then?
I had 4 hours of sleep last night and I'm like really feeling it today. But on average, I'd say I get about 6 hours of sleep.
Okay.
Of course, I aim for 8. That would be in an ideal world.
Right.
And there's times where I can kind of like weave some naps in here and there. I wake up at about 3 or 3:15 Monday through Friday. So it's actually insane to think about working for a good chunk of the day when most people are still sleeping.
Yeah.
And yep. So then your work day is done pretty early in the morning. And a lot of times, like I was there till like 1 p.m. today, you know, just getting a bunch of stuff done. So time management is not something that it is my strong suit. I'm constantly late. My mother says I'll be late for my own funeral. It's not something that I'm proud of. I hate that about myself. Every like New Year's or every like first of every month, I'm really going to be on time. But I could be right outside of a meeting with 2 minutes to spare. And I'm like, oh, I got 2 minutes. I'm going to call my mom. Or you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So it's time management. It's just being disciplined with myself, which is not my strong suit.
Is there anything you're doing to work on that?
Oh boy. I mean... unfortunately for myself, I just moved a little bit out of town to be technically closer to work because work is kind of past Four Corners or around Four Corners. So I thought I'd be doing myself like a great justice by saving myself time every morning. Mm-hmm. So, getting more sleep or whatever, but anytime throughout the day running around, oh, I forgot something and I'm DJing later that night and I have to run a solid 25-30 minutes to my house. So it's almost like I live in a big city now because it's like I need to constantly plan for traffic and travel time.
Right.
So that one thing has like really killed me. But I feel like overall I've gotten much better. I've improved a lot. But it has its hit and misses.
Well, this is crazy to me because you get so little sleep. You're always running around. And yet every time, another thing that people always mention about what they love about you is your enthusiasm. Your openness, your love, like you just bring it everywhere you go. And that's something that I've really noticed and has affected me in a very positive way. So where do you think that comes from? Where do you think that has come from? And what have you done to work on that maybe?
It's such a good question because I feel like it's something that I've been lacking in, especially the last year since my sleep schedule has so dramatically changed. DJing, I'd be up, 2 or 3 a.m. most nights or 4 or 5 nights out of the week if I was, like, lucky to be that busy. And so the schedule has totally turned to 180. And where my job constantly was very public and social before, and I was always around people, now I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm around a really small crew. But also in, like, radio and DJ in the past, I've always worked by myself, set up by myself, been in a box by myself, talked to myself. And so now to have like a team and like a whole different social avenue with work, it's been this really interesting dichotomy of realizing how much I missed that and actually how much I don't miss staying up late, being at, Plonk Wine every Monday night, which I love and I love going in there, but it almost, not enjoying work, thinking like every Monday being like, oh, I'm up till 1 a.m. tonight, like no matter what, even if I'm up early coaching at like the Yellowstone Club or riding that day or doing whatever it is that we do. And then just knowing it was going to be a really long night to just a tough turnaround in the morning to whatever it was. And so then as I got busier with television and all these other things, it's just made me kind of try to prioritize and figure out what's more important. It's just interesting having such a crazy, unique job that I am excited about. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's just that the hours are so tough. And I was recently asked if I would rather do the evening show. But then they come in like mid to late afternoon. They have a crunch deadline till 5 p.m., quickly get ready, do the show, turn around, do all the updates, and then do the 10 o'clock news. They're home by 11, 11:30. So then they've got the whole chunk of their day. If they've got families or children or spouses, right. It's such a hard time of the day to be away. And that was my exact shift when I did radio for like 6 or 7 years was that time. And then I did morning radio. And then again, it's like this other really opposite schedule in this media world that I've chosen for myself, or that's kind of presented itself. My mom was just giving me a hard time at Thanksgiving. She's like, are you seeing anybody? And I was like, Mom, if you could find me like the world's most wonderful garbage man or like baker or barista that has these insane hours, or like a ski patroller or whatever. I was like, I've got some like ideas, but, you're in a relationship to spend time with someone, and it's like the one thing that I don't usually have or give. Mm-hmm. I'm a gift giver, and that's why I think I'm really supportive and I'm a lovey, but I just don't have time. And that's terrible. It's kind of like cats in the cradle. You know, all of a sudden this guy's life goes by and he didn't like play with his child because he worked all the time.
Well, even being in that position, it's still like your light still comes through bright.
Sometimes.
Most of
I've got my moments. I've got my moments.
I suppose. Do you think the way you are, how much of that has been affected by being, you know, the fourth child of six?
That's a huge part of it.
Okay.
My family's absolutely the biggest part of it. My mom's from Brooklyn. My dad's from a small town in Minnesota. They're two very different people, an early bird and a night owl, and the whole nine yards in between, whatever comes with being from the Midwest and the East Coast. And so I have a lot of both of them. And it's interesting because all of my siblings are very different. It's one boy and then five girls. So we're a very interesting bunch. And we take a lot from each other and have learned a lot from each other. But I think with my siblings' experiences in life, whether they've traveled abroad or lived abroad or had family or married someone from Russia or married someone from Ireland, I mean, my family is just really interesting individually, so collectively as a bunch, we're a really crazy group, and yeah. I think that's where I get a lot of it.
Gosh,
mm-hmm.
Have they helped with another thing that you mentioned this? I think in your pachakcha 2 years ago or so, that you were like last chair trumpet and
oh yeah,
sang in front and choir, never got any solos.
Totally.
So, where do you think you've gotten your resiliency from?
I think I've always kind of identified with kind of the class clown character, growing up in school. I mean, I was like homecoming queen. I was friends with like the stoners, but was like on the soccer team. You know what I mean? I was everything, but I wasn't, I kind of think of the quote from Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec's about, whole-assing or half-assing something. Mm. I've half-assed everything. So I never had like one super solid group of core friends.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. I think that's maybe why I'm not in like a super committed relationship, because I think I'm everywhere, but so lightly on the surface. Do you know what I mean? It's like jack of all trades, master of none. I really identify with that quote because, I was never the best trumpet player or guitar player, or like the best singer. There wasn't that one activity that I solely identified with. So I think that made me, you know, do a little dabble of this and that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With everything that you've done, is there one thing that sticks out as the thing that you're most proud of, most happy with?
Oh, wow. That's such a great question. Last year, I was asked to host the Christmas Stroll, and I love the holidays. And it was exactly a year ago, as a matter of fact, maybe a year and a week ago. But when they had asked, I was, of course, so excited. And I was like, I have 12 different outfits that I could wear. And I was just, like, beyond prepared for it. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of that cool kind of pat on the back, like, being aware, like, hey, you're an outstanding community member that gives a lot back. But we'd like you to represent this special day and this special occasion. It's a very family-friendly event. obviously, but that just was like a really like, oh, really, gee whiz. You know, it was kind of one of those moments.
Nice.
That's like the first thing that kind of comes to my mind, I think, just because it's most recent and it's holiday time.
True. So but one of the other things that you did was your 30th birthday party was huge. It was a big fundraiser around town. You made this hilarious YouTube video calling out Ellen to come. And it was really great. And so I watched that and I was like, oh, this is incredible. And then I watched the highlights of the fundraiser itself and I noticed that Ellen wasn't on there. So what was that like? What was it like to spread this incredible hope that Ellen would come?
And then... try to like make a video go viral or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. What was that experience?
It was working with one of my best buddies who graduated from the MSU film department. We just came up with this, what we thought was a really funny idea. And it was really well perceived. We were asking Ellen, I based my variety show on the Muppets. Mm. And how the Muppets obviously are a band of crazy characters, but bringing out what they're good at. And and I was kind of the Kermit the Frog saying, these are all my friends that I want to showcase in the Bozeman area for my special birthday, raising money for what I think we need as a community center. And when I first moved here, I was shocked that we didn't have a type of YMCA or a place where kids could go after school or families could go to work out or even like a, you know, we have like a swim center and many gyms and things like this, but we don't have like a place where people can get like CPR certified on a Tuesday night. You know what I mean? Like a place where people go. And I was spoiled in Bismarck. We had an outstanding YMCA. That's where I learned how to, you know, do gymnastics and swim and everything else. And all my friends were camp counselors every summer. I mean, we were just super, super, super into it. Every time I go home, I go swimming. I mean, every time I'm like picking up like a step aerobics class every time I go home. So I kind of made it my goal. I said, I will not leave this town until there's a community center built. Like, I want to be a part of that.
Nice.
And so that's where this was stemmed. And as a matter of fact, in late September, the YMCA broke ground. And that was about 3.5 years ago that we did that. And they started their capital campaign shortly after that. But we wanted to do a bang to let the public know, this is what we're trying to do. We need a ton of funds. So they went to the big hitters first, asking for millions of dollars here and there. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of thousands and 50,000. And they have obviously different levels of sponsoring. So once it's completed, I plan on doing another variety show to kind of follow up. But anyway, to get back to your question with Ellen, as a Muppet, they always had, you know, Michael Jordan make a cameo, or they had like a, you know, some super, like Stevie Wonder or something that would be like, not the host, but like the one special guest that does something and like plays the piano and all the Muppets right, come out or something. Yeah. So Ellen is my lady, my person, my Wonder Woman, you know, obviously she is Miss Positivity and Miss Wonderfulness and all of that. So I reached out after we made this really professional video and gave a good plea. And I say in the video that, and maybe not verbatim, but basically the effect, I don't have leukemia. I'm not like a poor, starving family. It's not that this is an emergency, but this is what we're doing in Bozeman, Montana. And I want you to know what kind of situation and need that we're in. I'm not asking for a dollar of your money. This is not what that's about. What this is about is showing people that I had this like crazy dream and I wanted to ask my favorite special person to come and help me out with this fundraiser that, of course, we're raising our own funds. I don't need your money because we need to do this on our own. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking for millions of dollars for this thing to be built overnight. This has to be built within our community. We realize that. But if I could get you to be here, it would maybe just kind of spring this eternal hope. So February 10th, it was almost exactly 1 month prior. So we had sent the video in like early January. And it was a Monday night. And it was freezing. And I had all my DJ stuff. And I was walking into Plonk Wine. It was a Monday night. And my phone rings. And I could hear it in my pocket. But my hands were full. And I was like 2 steps from the door. And I was like just scurrying inside. And I set everything down. I was trying to look at it. And it just said Los Angeles County with like the area code and the number. It obviously didn't say the person's name on it. And I stopped and I froze and I thought about it for a minute. And I was like, oh my God, like it's Ellen. This is it. And I drop everything and I pick up the phone. I'm like, Ellen? And this like adorable laughter comes out. And it's this super wonderful like middle-aged guy. And he's like, oh, sweetie, no, my name's Brian. I'm Ellen's web producer.
Oh my gosh.
And we just watched your video. And I'm like, I'm thinking like Ellen's on speakerphone and like, holy shnikes, this is happening. Long and short of it, we talked for maybe the better part of like a half an hour, 45 minutes. He asked me all about what we're doing. He asked me more about the variety show. He asked me a million questions about myself and what I do in Bozeman, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I can't believe how late I'm here. It's a Monday night. Like, I have to go home. But I really want to give you a call back tomorrow. Is there a good time to reach you? And I'm like, yeah, I guess tomorrow would work. You could call me at, you know, he's like freaking out. So anyway, he calls me back the next day and we ended up talking for about another half hour, maybe close to an hour, maybe the second time. And he's like, we absolutely love what you're doing. He's like, for the entire month of March this year, Ellen's going to be taping her show in Australia.
Ooh.
And my show was on March 19th.
Ooh.
And so I'm thinking like, yeah, right. You've been talking to me way too long. Like, she's totally coming or you're sending somebody or whatever. And he's like, we just want to like send you the best and we're just so proud of you and keep it up and let us know how it goes. Nice. And let us know if you do another one. And so I was devastated. And still on the day of, I was like, something's gonna happen. Because it was so amazing to be contacted twice, you know?
Yeah.
And so she didn't show up. And the show went on and was marvelous. And we raised like $25,000 in 2 hours. And it was insane. And then like another $20,000 of sponsorships. And it was just nuts.
That's awesome.
But we did it without her. And I think in the long run, that's like what was really special to me was... I kind of had to be my own superstar and my own, not cameo, but like my own spirit, I guess, that I was looking for. And it was actually this crazy life lesson because I was so fixated on her coming that I kept losing like some other details and some other important things that I could have been concentrating on.
Yeah.
I hired one of my best friends in San Francisco to be my stage manager. And she works for Red Bull and insane, like big companies and throws massive parties and things like this. So she was really able to keep me on track. Lucia Stewart, incredible human being. But she, without her, I would have been totally lost. But it was kind of this like wake up call. And I think she actually, and one of my other good girlfriends was the one that kind of called me out. Like, why do you need Ellen? Everything that you have is here with your people. And so that was really awesome. Actually, that was actually like a good, like call out and like,
awesome.
Yeah.
So that really wasn't, I mean, that wasn't a failure at all.
No, it really wasn't. Yeah. I mean, we raised money and awareness, and that's what the whole thing was about, you know?
Hey, everyone. This was the end of the first part of the interview. We reconvened a few days later, and here's the continuation. So we left off last time. We talked a little bit about your family, a little bit about the things that you're doing, Ellen. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, along the lines of everything that you do, is what's your favorite thing that you do? Is it DJing? Is it auctioneering now that you've had a little dabble into that?
Not even close to that yet. I really wish that that would be like my jam right now. But as a matter of fact, I was just asked to be the auctioneer at something that I was very honored and flattered that they had asked me. But it's definitely not up my alley. And the people that will be at this function would probably be wondering, what the hell is this girl doing up there? Because I really don't have the experience quite yet.
Oh.
And I turned it down. I really am busy that entire weekend. But it was just one of those things that was like, I don't have to say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. But when I got started DJing and when I've gotten started doing other things, my motto is just like, say yes, give it a chance. You have to get the experience. And that's not exactly how I'm feeling about auctioneering. And to be honest, I'm feeling slightly burnt out on DJing just because now it's become the afterthought when I've been really focusing on anchoring this year to really try to get that skill set down. This sounds so geeky, but I really, really enjoy going to work. I really do. I love being at the TV station. I think it's because I really love my coworkers. And I mentioned, I think last time, that radio is such an interesting gig because you're by yourself the whole time. You're laughing at your own jokes. You're hoping that your own jokes are funny, or you're trying to say something endearing without sounding like a total cheese ball, you know, or sounding like that DJ at a strip club, like, up next, we've got, you know, kind of something like that. But I think the anchoring thing, it's still relatively new. I haven't even been doing it for a year, but it's taken me months to really delve into it and just be immersed in it. It's almost kind of like when you're starting a, like a foreign language class, you're like, I am never going to pick this up. And then finally, like, your teacher says a word that you're like, oh wow, I understood that. And all of a sudden it's just like, it gets better just with time, just with practice, like I guess anything. Are you familiar with Macklemore?
Yeah.
Of course. He's got a song on, I think, his previous album. It's called 10,000 Hours. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this song?
10,000 Hours I've heard, like, everywhere. Like, right. I know that term from know many term. Different areas, so it's possible.
Sure. So you get the idea of you do something for 10,000 hours, and now it's now you can be considered, maybe not even to be a professional, but to be mastering that craft in that direction.
Right.
And so anyway, this beautiful song, I mean, it's, you know, just put the song, so it's just really pretty that way. But it's such a great reminder that what we were just talking a moment ago, it's like kids or people in our generation want whatever it is, but they don't want to put the work into it. And so right now I want to be the world's best auctioneer and I want to blow people out of the water, but I haven't even been close to putting in 100 hours. Do you know what I mean? And I've got a ways to go. And learning from the majority of them were older white males from all around, like kind of the Bible Belt and all around, you know, farmland and Iowa and, you know, these beautiful parts of the country. And they've been doing it since they were 16 because their dad did it and their grandpa did it and whatever. And it is such a male dominated industry that, I think that's why I so badly want to be so good at it.
Right. Yeah.
But I've got a lot of, I've got a lot of work.
No, and it's,
left ahead of me.
It's also important to know and realize that you can't put 10,000 hours into all of the different things that you do. I mean, over time, I suppose you could, but I don't know. What did you say last time? You're
the jack of all trades, master of none, or the Jill of all trades. I should say.
Oh yeah, I saw that in all the interviews and things. She's the Jill of all trades.
So cheesy, but it, I mean, it's like I like to dabble. You know what's interesting? My mom always said when I was in middle school and high school, Missy, you can't do it all. And because, you know, I of course would be trying to be doing 10,000 things and then like make it to somebody's graduation party. But like right as I'm walking out the door, I'm like, I should make a picture collage. You know, it's like, I gotta come with a present. And then I'd miss the entire party and I'd show up late. But then I had this awesome gift to give, you know, but it's like you just miss the whole party. You know, and I always hated that phrase that she would say to me, you can't do it all. I guess I can. But it's so true. You can't, because then the quality is just, it's so far gone.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, what's the point?
Yeah. Not that I'm saying you can't be an awesome auctioneer and anchor. I think you, the thing is, you have so many skills, I think, to begin with, that stuff is probably going to be way easier for you. You're going to need 1,000 hours.
Yeah. Probably be more than that.
Maybe. I don't know.
I do naturally just have the gift of gab from, and I'd like to attribute it
really?
From my parents, being from a big family, trying to like fight to get a sentence in. So again, like being in front of the crowd and like that kind of like off the cuff stuff when like there's a bobble and you can quickly come up with something. I'm not worried about that kind of stuff in the slightest, but it's like the actual chemistry of what it takes for like a bid call.
Yeah.
That's what frightens me. And it's also really interesting because I work with my voice all the time, but auctioneers will speak or call for 6 to 10 hours on end at like a real estate sale or an estate sale, excuse me. So, you know, here they are going through each room. Now we're selling the forks. Now we're selling the candlesticks, and they go through each item. And I mean, imagine speaking or like being in a musical for 6 hours. I mean, it's like, so these guys really, you know, they've done a lot with their vocal work, and it's really impressive to see, to have like an old Farmer Joe who's got like chew in his mouth and be like, can't drink alcohol. It'll just dry your throat right out. And you're like, I actually didn't really think about that. Cause you think about going to a fundraiser and you want like a glass of wine to kind of fit in or like loosen up. He's like, absolutely no alcohol. I'm like, oh, okay. There you have that. And it doesn't look professional.
Right.
You know?
What other tips and tricks did you get for that? Do you do
as far
training?
As voice work?
Yeah, voice work.
So we had like a lot of vocal workshops and a lot of different warm-ups. I mean, almost how like how an opera singer or how, you know, a stage singer or something would do their warm-ups. We would do a warm-up, you know, every morning, drinking warm water with lemon or no lemon. Depending upon your preference. Things like to stay away from, like foods and stuff, like salty stuff to stay away from, things with like a lot of sodium. Stuff that's actually quite a bit of common sense.
Okay.
But just interesting. I'll go through my notes and I'll definitely, you know, dig up some stuff from school, from auctioneer school. But I mean, it's just amazing too, because it's like, as almost like a parent, how do you teach your children about the world and about everything? It's like, it's just all through experience and it's day by day. And if you were to ask in the Michelle Obama Oprah interview that was just like a day or two ago, Oprah was asking Michelle, what was your meeting like with Melania? Like, how are you preparing her to be the next first lady? And are you helping, or what's this, you know, deal there? Cause there's obviously a lot of tension. She said, Laura Bush was so kind and so gracious and her door was open. Because when Barack first got elected, I didn't even know the first question I should ask. I didn't know what I know now. And so, I kind of feel like that about, you know, whether any of the skills and crafts that we want to perfect. It's like, I don't even know the first thing to prepare myself for the next big thing. Because I don't even know what's coming down the pike.
That's a good point.
Which is kind of interesting.
So, along those lines, too, having people that are mentors who help you go through, your parents, of course, you mentioned are always big influences. So other than your parents, who do you think has been the most influential person in your life?
That I've met or not met?
Either or.
Okay.
Yep.
That's such a great question. These are just full of great questions. My mother's father, we called him Boompa. His name is Walter McDougall, New York City guy, born and bred, as Irish as they come. Just a phenomenal human being. He was in the Navy. He was the president of the Bank of New York City for a period of time. He remembered every single person's name. And it didn't matter if it was like the janitor at the bank or like a neighbor down the street or whatever. And the way he would do it, he would say your name anywhere from 3 to 7 times in the first sentence that he met you. So he'd be shaking your hand and the whole time making eye contact. Steven, wow, love the name Steven. Steven, tell me, what is it that you do? Wow, Steven, you are an interviewer or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he said your name so many times and you're like, oh, I already forgot this guy's name. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he would do it so much so that almost you loved your own name. You loved hearing your own name. And the way that he could draw people into conversations. So he would go on like a big trip or, you know, had just, you know, visited somewhere, seen something cool at a museum. And he'd say, Steven, I was at the Met the other day. And let me tell you, Steven, you would have loved this exhibit. And you're thinking, you don't even know me, but like I would. Should I go see it? Wow. You know, and it was one of those things where it was very sincere. It wasn't by any means, you know, just like run of the mill. Right. But he would just find like the one or two things that you're interested in or what you do for a living and somehow remember who you are instead of just like, oh, that's Steven from accounting or whatever. He would really have it dialed in on who you were as a person in like the tiniest nutshell. And he remembered every person's name. And I feel like for somebody of that caliber that was that important or that prestigious in his accolades, for him to remember who you are, what you did. And now he passed away when I was a senior in high school. He actually died right in between my senior prom and my last soccer game. Which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of to be expected. His health was, you know, going downhill. And all of my siblings, we flew to New York. We went to this. It wasn't even a funeral. It was like the coolest celebration. It was like Dia de los Muertos in Mexico, but of like an old white guy, you know,
yeah,
from Long Island, New York.
Yeah.
And I mean, raising 7 kids in Brooklyn. I mean, this and that. I mean, just such a phenomenal human being. But I think that's where my mom gets a lot of her vivaciousness from, and the reason she became such a great public speaker and such an orator and such a storyteller.
Yeah.
The man could tell a joke, like a new joke, you know, every moment. Every time you'd see him, he's got something new or a new anecdote or a new story. And he had the best punchlines, absolutely the best storyteller. And I think as a child growing up and doing family reunions, and we would do what's called Showtime, every single family function. So my brother, his name's Thomas Casey Cashman, but everyone's always called him Casey, and he was named after the poem Casey at the Bat. And so my Boompa would always do that, and then Casey grew up watching Boompod do it. And so then it became Casey's thing. And that's like the poem that he was named after. I mean, it's just bizarre. But everybody in my family like does like recites like the Cremation of Sam McGee or like these massive ballad poems that are pages long, but everybody's got to memorize because we've heard them so many times. And I could probably do Casey at the Bat if I was put on the spot, but it's one of those things that's like, it's just like so ingrained in my blood. And I think about him often. I think about how important it was for him to like write letters and, you know, be on top of like the grandkids' birthdays and things like that, where, you know, it's kind of a lost art to write a good letter, you know? And so, every year for New Year's, I have a New Year's resolution that's something that like Boompah would have done. So like last year it was to drink more champagne.
Nice.
And bring champagne to like parties and places that I go. The year before was to write more postcards and letters. Like really simple things instead of being like, I'm gonna, you know, take something like a negative aspect of my life that I'm trying to like work on. It's like, I'm trying to just like create more happy. He's such a happy, happy man. So that's like the first person that really comes to my life, comes like, that like inspires my life.
Oh, he sounds incredible.
If I were to pick somebody that I haven't really met, it would probably have to be like along the lines of like an Oprah. Mm-hmm. In the sense that Oprah and Larry King are like my two, and they're like, you know, kind of obvious go-tos for like the interview world and the media world.
Right.
What was really interesting about Oprah, she was kind of doing her thing and kind of climbing the ladder, and there was an anchor that was moving, and this was like around the Chicago area, and, put in there 2 weeks, or it was, you know, something came up and they were kind of trying to fill the position really quickly. And one of the producers called her and was like, I think you'd be great for this. And she's like, I'm black, I'm overweight, and my name is Oprah. And he's like, give it a shot. Like, what have you got to lose? She walked in there with so much confidence and she got the job. And they were like, we think we got to change your name. We got to get you like a stage name. Like nobody's going to know how to say it. It's just like a really weird name. Yeah. She's like, okay, then I don't want it. And they were like, awesome, we'll take you. Like, it was just like that pit bull that they were looking for. You couldn't go anywhere in the world now and find somebody who has no idea who Oprah is or right. Who that name is.
Yeah.
She's the only one, you know? But, you know, obviously talk about making her way. Now she's got her own network and this and that, but she's still doing the damn thing. She's still out there after it every day and has overcome so much adversity. Larry King, and I think I've told you a little bit about his background, but I adore the fact that same type of thing. He was thrown into something. He was at the right spot at the right time. Old radio station in Miami. The guy gets stuck in traffic. That's supposed to do like the weather. They bring him in. CEO of the building was ever like, okay, goes through the newspaper. Yeah. King Liquor's on sale. Your last name's King. Yeah. Get on air, you know? And look where he is now. He's been in the business for over 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unreal.
Incredible.
And he's such a good listener. I mean, I feel like that's how some of these people have become so successful. They're real. They're so genuine and you could feel it.
What were you saying?
Yeah. So I don't know. That's such a good question because I feel like if I really had the chance to think about it, I could come up with an answer that's not as obvious as
Oprah. The best answers are the ones that you come up with off the top of your head.
Yeah, you just feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What's it like being a local small town celebrity?
That's hilarious. I was actually working out this afternoon and a guy came up to me and he was like, you probably don't remember me. My name's Brian. You made a bunch of videos at Bridger Bowl about 10 years ago. And he asked my daughter to be in one of them. And here she is now. She probably doesn't even remember. And she's like, I remember. Wow. You know, nice to see you again. And anyway, it was just the funniest thing because it's such a small town and I've been here for a hot minute. And, it's just so cool to see like the waves of people kind of come in and out of what you're involved with at the time. And I don't know if this is something that I'm necessarily proud of, but I feel like I've got a lot of seasonal friends. I've got all my winter friends that I hang out with nonstop for 5 months. We're teaching and coaching and carpooling every day and we're having a beer after work or, you know, those kind of fun things. And as soon as summer hits, I don't see them till fall. And it sucks, right? But it's just kind of the way how that goes. And now I've, you know, got work friends. I've got, you know, all these little pockets of people. And so it's just so interesting to kind of see, oh, I'm not in Big Sky Youth Empowerment anymore. I don't see that crowd. But it's like each of those is kind of like a notch in your belt or, you know, some type of like ornament to the Christmas tree that is just like decorated and kind of like builds upon. So anyway, with all that being said, it's really funny because in the radio world, longest time, nobody knew really what I looked like. And if I would host an event or something, they'd be like, oh yeah, I always thought you had dark hair. Or like, are you from California? Or like, where are you from? Your voice sounds different. I'm like, I'm from North Dakota, you know? It's just so funny. But it is interesting because I will get recognized now, especially just that from doing the morning show. Not a lot of people wake up at 5:30 in the morning and watch television. Right. I kind of hope they don't. I get it if the TV's on in the background and you're cooking breakfast. That's like part of your morning routine. But I wouldn't be one of those people that's like, ah. I'm more of like a phone person, like catch up on my news, what's happening for the day. For the people that have extra time in the morning, I give them so many props because I'm constantly like frazzled out the door, like, ah, I didn't do the 12 things that I wanted to do. If it had an extra hour every morning, that would be amazing. Anyway, it is kind of interesting to be recognized like at the grocery store, like I've just come from like a hot yoga class and I'm like, have 12 eyeballs and I'm like, I can't even function. And someone's like trying to chat you up at the co-op and you're like, okay, I have sweat dripping off my chin right now. I really don't want to have this conversation, but it's adorable. You're saying hi or that you and your husband watch in the morning. And I always appreciate hearing that because it's like, oh, great. We're not just talking to ourselves. You know what I mean? So those kind of things are really endearing and really sweet. This might sound kind of crazy, but I could easily understand why like the uber famous people totally go crazy and how you can't just have like a lunch with like a loved one without having somebody come up to you. You need a bodyguard. I mean, I couldn't imagine a Beyonce or a Justin Timberlake or like, you know, you can't go to the grocery store. You simply can't do those things because it's not just like you're getting bombarded, but someone's going to be taking a picture of you or like getting, there's a funny quote with Dolly Parton. She said she'll never eat in public because someone is going to get that shot and like, you know, Photoshop something, you know, just make her look a mess. Yeah. And so she just knows there's like a handful of things that she won't do or won't do in public or whatever. Because you can't, you know, once you like make it to that level, by no means am I comparing myself to Dolly Parton or Beyonce or whoever.
You're close. It's
just interesting because a lot of times you just want to always be like chipper in a happy, like go lucky mood. And sometimes like someone will just say something like, wow, you look a lot better on camera. Or you know, just like one thing that you're like, I know you were just trying to say hi, and I'm just a sensitive human being, so I never would read the comments. I'll never read, like, that's the reason that I will never have, like, a YouTube channel. I just can't handle the haters and the hate and whatever when it's like I tried to exude so much love. Again, going back to this Michelle Obama interview that I just watched, she was saying how hard it was. I mean, Barack was a senator, and they, you know, she was running a hospital in Chicago and this and that. Some like really amazing, important things. But obviously once you're really thrust into the public eye and then terrible things people would say about them and any president, she would just be so heartbroken. She's like, wow, you don't know me as a person. And then she would kind of sit back and say, okay, this is some type of like reflection of what it is that they're going through or what they want to see in me. They want to see that I'm this angry black woman and that I'm a terrible person and whatever. And she's like, that's not what I am. So I started living my life out loud. And that was kind of the quote. And of course, Oprah was like, ooh, living life out loud. And she loved it, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it. I was like, that is like the most genuine, sincere advice that you could probably give anybody. I'm going to do what I can and what I do on a daily basis. And if you aren't into it, I just don't have time. And I'm not going to let you bring me down. Because it's certainly been a thing. Or, you know, people would call up to the radio station and be like, this song sucks. And I'd be like, oh. And I'm like, I didn't make this song. But the fact that I'm playing it, does that mean I have bad judgment? I'm like, it's a top 40 radio station. I don't have much of a choice as to what's playing right now.
Right.
But you kind of learn to have a little bit of a thicker skin. But with that being said, it would be kind of like, now as a DJ, I was DJing this party on Friday night and a girl was entirely too intoxicated and kept coming up and telling me what to do. And it wasn't like, hey, could you please play? it was like, haven't you even heard of, well, you know, why aren't you? And all of a sudden it was like attacking me personally instead of like, here's what I would love to hear on this dance floor tonight. So I, all of a sudden now it's like my temper is like gone. So I don't have as much patience with people because I think that I'm just immediately like on edge, like a little bit more burnt out. And why are you approaching me? I worry about my safety sometimes. I've had a couple of stalkers and some like really scary situations. And so like I try not to be very public, like on Facebook. Like I would never obviously like, here's my number. You're having a bad day. Like call me. I would never do anything like that. And again, not that it really matters. And I'm not like saying that I'm Beyonce and there's like people out there stalking me or I'm Kim Kardashian getting robbed at gunpoint.
You're right. You don't have to be. That sort of stuff happens. I mean, that happens to
anybody.
Yeah,
it happens to anybody. On Facebook or whatever. But the funny thing is with radio and you're talking to somebody one-on-one in their car on like a nightly basis, or it's like a truck driver that's passing through I-90, and all of a sudden like you say the one thing that kind of like strikes a chord with someone, they feel that they know you, or they watch you every morning and they're in their pajamas and they're making breakfast for their kids or whoever, and they feel that they're getting to know you. And I don't put on any front, like who I am is who I am. But it is really interesting because then when people do come up in public and they're like, oh, the other day when you're talking about this, and isn't that so funny? Your brother does that. And you're like, holy smokes, like you are really listening. And it's great. At the same time, it's kind of like, whew. And it is frustrating. I can't just go to like the Christmas stroll with like a friend and expect to like stroll. It's like I stop every 5 seconds because of course I want to say hi. And that's the point of like going to a public event like that. But then my friend's like, we're not bringing you here. Like, and Missy, when I tell you we're leaving in 5 minutes, like I'm grabbing your hand and we're walking out the door, or, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just one of those things you kind of, it's like finding that good balance. And if I was a little bit better at just being a little bit more assertive and being like, hey, nice to see you, I got to bounce. But instead I'm like, hi, how are your 12 kids and what's new? You know what I mean? So it's kind of finding that balance.
Yeah.
So part of me, of course, it's fun. And then a part of like the local small town thing, it gets old really quick. I don't know. It's kind of a hard question to ask or answer because it goes like a different way every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you answered my other question about haters and how.
I don't do well.
Yeah.
I don't do well. I think I'm just entirely too sensitive. I always have been a people pleaser. And I always wanted to, you know, have everybody like me, or you don't like me, how come? What did I do? And they're like, I just don't like you. I'm like, okay, there's nothing I can do to change your mind. Do you know what I mean? And now I've kind of got past all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you try to please everybody, boy, you're going to end up really failing yourself. It's like a Judy Garland quote of some sort of like, be the first rate version of yourself because everybody else has already taken, or an Oscar Wilde quote or whatever the hell. But kind of things where it's like, why are you trying to impress somebody else when it's like, now you're not being true to yourself? You know, you kind of think about maybe like a middle school girl, like with that identity crisis phase, and she's trying to do whatever she can to get this boy in class to like her. But if he does like that person, then what's the point? Because then that's not who you are.
Right. That actually reminds me of a quote that you said.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he's done his homework.
Oh yeah. If you're only gonna have one go at it, you might as well enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you find that?
A little different. But,
where'd you find that?
Somewhere on the internet.
Yep.
It was. Let's see here. What interview was this? That one. The one that I just quoted from was from the Bozone.
Ah.
Missy O'Malley interview.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
He's got some dirt on the old Miss.
Yeah. Looked up your records, we won't go into that.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Well, the whole idea of this, of course, is to foster the admirable qualities that we see in each other and ourselves. So that leads to another question of, what quality of yours do you think is least admirable and you'd like to change? And which quality of yours do you admire most about yourself?
Wow, that's so good. I cannot stand that I run myself a little too thin, and that I can't ever like fully like complete one thing. Like my follow through is really terrible. And I think that kind of goes along with trying to do too much, trying to pack it all in before like a deadline. I really admire people that are like a little bit more type A than I am. I'm not type A whatsoever. But I appreciate people that can have a goal, have the steps, figure it out, and just finish a project. Cause I have so many unfinished projects. Mm. You know what I mean? There's so many weddings that I've gone to and I've taken pictures and video, obviously not professionally, but I'm like, I'm going to make them a really cute video that's going to be, you know, 5 minutes that I could post on YouTube and they could share it with their friends and family that weren't there at their wedding. And then all of a sudden it's like 4 years later, I'm like, it's their anniversary again. How have I not, you know? And it wasn't maybe necessarily something that I would say that I would finish. That kind of stuff drives me nuts about myself because yeah. I really, yeah. really wish. It's like, what's the use of starting, you know, a great project if you're not going to finish it? Like, I'm going to paint half of this room. It's not that helpful.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. And I mean, just like always running late. I'd like to think that I'm a dependable person as far as like, if you need me to do something, I will absolutely be there. Mm-hmm. Will I be on time? Probably not. But my friends at least know that about me now. And obviously I have enough like gusto with work at the moment that I of course have to be early and have to help produce and edit the show and all those things. So it's like, I can't miss that. Yeah. So I luckily won't be late for the start of a television show. But the idea is I could still always be there a little bit earlier. I could still always be there earlier to help out or to do whatever it is. So I guess those little things like that drive me nuts about myself is like, and it's like an endearing thing that I'm trying to do too much, but that's usually like a deal breaker. You know what I mean? Like,
Just
being like, okay, we're doing a dinner at so-and-so's house. I'm like, great, I'm bringing in dessert. But then I've missed like the entire dinner, but I show up with dessert right when it's being served. And they're like, it's the same type of thing. You know what I mean? As far as like trying to do a little too much. That's the thing about myself that I'm like constantly trying to change and trying to improve. Something that I admire about myself. Wow. What a hard, interesting question. I guess that I can appreciate the fact that I could talk to anybody. I could like go into a room and, you know, whether it's like age or sex or race or whatever, like those things are kind of, I can just like start a conversation with whoever, try to find the good in people. I feel like that's one thing I really am able to do, like right off the bat. What do I admire about myself? That's such a hard question.
Those are great, though.
You
can keep going if you want.
It's really hard to, you know, it's like trying to find like one good thing about yourself. It's funny because I feel like this is like a Dove commercial when like asking women, what would you change about themselves? And they could list like 30 things. It's like, what's your favorite attribute? And they're like, I don't have one. I guess I like my feet or whatever. Yeah. I love my feet.
Good.
I love my feet. I don't know. That's such a great question. I feel like as Americans, we should be able to answer those questions a little bit better.
Ready for your final question?
Yes, I'm ready for my final question.
Okay. Final question. Who's somebody who's a part of your life who you admire? Why do you admire them? And what's one or two questions that you would love to have them answer?
Mm-hmm. God, I love that. Okay, so let me talk about Aaron Roberg for a minute. So as far as a woman that not only do I admire and respect, she is a person that I crave. Mm. She's a person that is so contagious in spirit that I want what she has. I want to bottle what she has. And every single time I'm around her, I watch her perform. I am directed by something that she does. She has a little tip or a little something. I hold on to it. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like Erin is this cool kid, like a grade or two above me on the playground that I'm kind of like following around like, oh, Erin does that. I'm going to do that. Or that's cool. because she does it so effortlessly, and she does it without trying to be a people pleaser, from what I can gather.
Yeah.
She's not necessarily trying to make a friend by doing what she does. She's just so true to herself. And the first couple of times I met her, or excuse me, not even met her, saw her. She was on stage performing at Broad Comedy. I was new to town, and I'm thinking, who is the little one? Who's the tiny one on stage with the really great legs that she can sing, and I can't take my eyes off of her? You know, when you see like a dance recital, there's usually like one or two of the dancers that you kind of connect with, or that you notice, oh, that one's off, or he's not that good, or whatever. And there's just that one that you really connect with. And Erin has always been that person for me. I've always really enjoyed going to shows and things like that, as you know. There's something about her that is so magnetic. And from the moment that I then started meeting her, you know, getting to know her more, and then I was asked to try out for Broad Comedy when one of the gals had moved away, and there was a handful of other girls that were at the audition. And I just kept thinking the whole time, I was like, and my go-to song is Fever by Peggy Lee, and or Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline. And I sang my song, I did my thing, and I was like, I don't think that went that well. And I was just thinking, I was like, what if? And I was like, it was like in the middle of the song, and I'm like looking at Katie and Soren, and they're, you know, like taking notes and this and that. And I was just, I kind of like dazed out, and I was like, what if I got to perform on stage with Erin Broberg? And I honestly, and then I was like, well, where am I? Hi, sorry. You know, it was like one of those things. And sure enough, I get the call back. And part of me was thinking like, that wasn't that hard. There was like not really a lot of other companies. There wasn't like 25 women vying for this spot, you know? Right. So anyway, I got the call, and I got a text from Erin Broberg like that night or the next day. And it was like, Missy O'Malley, we're so excited to have you. Can't wait for you to be abroad. And I about crapped my pants. I was just like, Erin Broberg is like the coolest lady, because she is. And when she looks at you and she has that eye contact, she makes you feel like you're the only person in the room. There's something about her that is so magical and so special. And I'm not just saying this because maybe one day like she'll see this. She is that type of person that I wish everybody had in their life. She's the type of lady that I wish everybody had for like a fifth grade teacher, because you just need that person in your life at that point in time. I feel so lucky that I've been able to work with her on numerous shows. She'd called and said that I'd be really funny for this one part at play at the Verge, and was cast. And then I got to be in the show with her as she directed, and having her as a director was amazing. I don't have that much theatrical experience, but knowing when somebody really knows how to direct a show and they can give you a great note without maybe doing the read for you or whatever. Anyway, I could go on about this woman all day, and
I could too. That's the thing. Yeah. Erin is incredible. I'm so glad that you like chose her.
She's just my special friend.
Right.
And her mom is going through health issues, and her family is obviously all trying to gather together to do that. Mm-hmm. Her relationship with her partner, Sweet Baby, who I didn't know his name for the longest time. I always called him Sweet Baby.
Yeah,
Nathaniel, gosh. I mean, they lead by example. Mm-hmm. She doesn't ever need to say anything or do anything that would make me feel uncomfortable. Oh, I should have done this. Mm-hmm. She'll never make you feel bad, but she'll always give you like a twist on how to take something and run with it. Right. She's amazing.
So what one or two questions do you want Erin Broberg to answer?
I would love to know from Miss Erin Broberg, how. I'd like to know how she does it. I'd like to know where it all came from, or, you know, is it real? Are you putting on it? Are you like doing some happy drugs on the side?
Real, yeah.
That's like, how, like, how do you have that? Because you asked that to me, and I'm like, oh, you obviously don't know me that well. Because there's times that it's not effortless. You know what I mean? You really have to try.
Yeah.
But there's something with Erin, and she's with the teens, or she's with us, or she's with, you know, putting on a massive fundraiser for the Verge Theater or something. And I was just thinking, how do you do it? How are you so genuine where people can see how genuine you are? How? So that would maybe be my first question. If I had to ask her a second question, it'd probably be something like really naughty or really like funny or like, you know, are you wearing underwear right now? Kind of like something like that. You know what I mean? Something well, along those lines. But that's just it. It's like to see how she reacts and to see her like comical improv twist on things.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Missy, I want to thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
I really want to thank you for being you and always supporting me and this community in the many ways that you do it. Got nothing but love for you, and thank you so much.
Jeez Louise, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. I think this is going to be a cool series and a cool way to spotlight different people and different cool things.
Thanks for listening if you're on the podcast, and if you're watching on YouTube or the blog, you can click the link above to see the very funny invite video Missy made for Ellen. Thanks again to Missy and to Kyle Sorensen for the music. And remember, you are admirable.